Tariq, what happened with South Park this week?
South Park, man, they doing 14 movies for the bag. $900 million for 14 South Park movies. We've been trying to talk about this for 2 Rick and Morty episodes. I've been watching Rick and Morty on mute. How do you guys feel about 14 South Park movies?
That's so many movies.
I want to know their definition of movie.
Yes, agreed. I have a feeling that these will be more akin to their specials, or like maybe even more akin to like what they've previously done for 3-part episodes, like Imagination Land or the Coon and Friends trilogy, that kind of stuff. Right. Which frankly I'm cool with. Like those are like Imagination Land, I think, is one of the best South Park things ever. I love those episodes. I think they're so funny. And it feels like a movie. So, yeah, I'm excited. I don't know what the heck it means, but I want to find out, and it's going to get me to sign up for Paramount Plus.
You don't have it already? I have it to watch iCarly.
Oh, I had it when it was CBS All Access to watch Star Trek, and I guess I should check. Maybe I do still have it. I hope I'm not paying for it and not using it.
I don't know how I forgot it was CBS All Access that fast.
They just changed it all.
I haven't jumped on it yet. Not yet. But keep pumping out SpongeBob spinoffs, then you know, maybe eventually.
It is actually gonna have like a pretty crazy original library. It already is setting up to have a pretty crazy original library. And I'm excited because they're also doing what is it? They're doing the Beavis and Butthead movie on there too. Well, is that a movie?
Oh yeah.
Sure.
So, and they've also got some original animated stuff coming up for it. So like, I don't know. I'm eager to see if they can lure me in. But also like, once there's more Star Trek back, that'll probably suck me because I'm a Star Trek guy. So
was that the Harper thing? That's Paramount Plus, right?
I think so. The Harper House. Yeah.
Yes.
Which is Brad Neely, right? Who did China, Illinois.
Right.
Yeah. That show looks really interesting. I don't know. I can't tell if it's going to be good, but I'm definitely going to check it out. It's so weird to juxtapose those character models with their like the backgrounds are so detailed and the characters aren't. That's so interesting.
Oh, wait. We've definitely talked about this before because I called it the Good Dinosaur.
We just talk about the same shit over and over. Sorry for listeners at home. So anyways, have you guys heard about this movie called Paddington 2? It's really good.
Have you ever had the drink balls before? I've just been informed.
All right. Well, one thing we also do every week is cue the theme song.
That was really clever. I like how you did that. You did a good job.
I've been watching them for years. It's always been something that fit with all the animated characters that's doing their own bits. With a fry who's in the future and a family guy that sucks. With a father from a hill, a burger family runs amok. The show and spies is the same guy, except he totally say f***. End of verse.
Let's watch cartoons that curse.
What the f*** is up, everybody? Welcome to Cartoons That Curse, the podcast where we talk about cartoons that say swear words. My name is Johnny. I'm here with my co-host Tariq. Tariq, how are you doing today? Do you have any news to share with us?
I don't know. How are you doing? Oh, it's me. You can buy me with the link either on screen or in description. I am not good at plugs.
For those who are just listening at home, Tariq is not offering to sell himself. He has a plushie in his hands that he is.
Yeah, not yet, baby. Not yet.
I'm glad you clarified that.
Yeah, you can't buy the black man just yet. You can't buy him just yet, but you can get a little toy and put it in your house.
It's a good plush. I ordered mine today. I'm very excited to have my friend Tariq on my shelf.
Oh, so good.
And I'm gonna start making my own Toonerific Tariq videos with it. And confuse people. It's gonna be fun.
I'm gonna do the same. I'm gonna start a channel called Toonerific Tariq. And since it's the second one, it'll therefore be better.
Oh, Oh man. And yeah, that who you just heard me, is our guest.
Why not thinking of
Nick, aka Nicktendo. Nick, how are you doing today? Welcome to the show. Thanks for being our guest.
Hey, doing well. It is Friday night. We spent an hour trying to put this together, so I'm jazzed to talk about Into the Wild Green Yonder. I guess I can talk a little bit about me. I do YouTube videos for the site YouTube, talk about animation, do reviews, make Tree cry sometimes. You know, the usual.
We all strive to make Tariq cry with our videos. That's our go-to.
And it always works. You two do a bang-up job. I'm crying now.
Nick, we're super stoked to have you on the show. Nick makes great videos. If you haven't seen them, you should go check out his channel, Nicktendo. But it's not the other Nicktendo. It's this Nicktendo. There's two Nicktendos, and one of them isn't him. And one of them is, so make sure to go to the right one.
If you see the cartoons that you recognize that are drawn well, that's the one.
If Nick... Ow! That are drawn well.
I'm not Nick's... a great artist myself, so I shouldn't be judging.
If Nick's channel had like a Futurama-style intro where the ship went by and it said Nicktendo, the little subtitle would say, not that Nicktendo.
Yeah.
It would say the other Nicktendo.
Drawn well, yeah. I just found out like last week, I never really knew that, but that little subtitle is supposed to be a parody of like the closed captioning on older television programs.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Which I've seen before, but I like never put two and two together.
Right.
Yeah, because I think likewise. one of them just says in color, which is like what they used
that's
to
like the first one.
The first one, you're right. It is the first one. It says in color, which is funny because it was 1999 when that came out. And it's like, well, yeah, I hope so.
Right.
So as you've probably figured out by now, we're here to talk about Into the Wild Green Yonder, the fourth and final Futurama movie, which at one point was the final Futurama anything for a short period of time before the revival. And now, you know, we've talked about these movies 3 weeks in a row. I'm sure you've been following along. And last week was Bender's Game, which I don't think we, you know, Tariq and I don't love Bender's Game, but we're ending on... A more fun
Bender's Shame.
Bender's Shame.
Bender's Shame, baby.
So this is Into the Wild Green Yonder. It was written by Ken Keeler, who also wrote Bender's Big Score and also wrote every single series finale they ever had to do for Futurama. So that includes Devil's Hands or Idle Playthings. This one, there's one called Overclockwise in the first revival set of episodes. And then the ultimate finale, Meanwhile. And he honestly did a very good job every time. Like every single one had a good, solid ending note that I would have been like, that's a nice way to go out for Futurama, including this one. So let's talk about Into the Wild Green Yonder. When did you guys first see Into the Wild Green Yonder? How have you felt about it in general? And have your thoughts changed since rewatching it?
Let's go with our guess. What do you think, Nick?
Yeah.
Nicktendo?
Yeah. I guess I can talk a little bit about my history with Futurama, like some of the other guests have. So I was very late to the game, didn't see any reruns on Adult Swim. Kind of heard about it during the Comedy Central era, where I just see like news, and I guess The Simpsons would reference it sometimes. So that's how I knew about it. But I never like, I was like, what is this? Should I be watching this Futurama show? And I didn't really give it a thought until they did the crossover with The Simpsons where it's like, well, now I need to watch it. Family Guy, didn't really feel like I needed to seek out Family Guy. I think I kind of had an idea of what Family Guy was when that crossover happened. But
Tariq is upset.
Yeah. When Simpsorama dropped, I was like, well, I gotta start watching Futurama. So I think that Christmas I got the full box set, so I had the luxury of watching the whole series in order, in production order, which Johnny and I have spent, we've had multiple conversations about production order versus broadcast order for Futurama. I had to explain to my friend I was watching the show with this week what broadcast order is. But yeah, so seeing Wild Into the Wild Green Yonder was right after Bender's Game. I think I saw the movies in multiple sittings, not like split up, but just like, well, it's been an hour, I gotta go do something else. So they right. weren't like sit down, let's watch a movie type affairs. And I remember after this, I was like, I think I need a break or else I'm going to burn through the series, because I burned through the classic series in maybe like a week. So yeah. The movies took a little longer, and then maybe it was like a few more weeks for the Comedy Central stuff.
That's a lot. I feel like I'm constantly having to explain in my videos the difference between production and broadcast order, which I'm tired of doing. But every time I don't, I get comments that are just like, but there's 10 seasons of Futurama. And I'm like, no, you fool.
Yeah, I agree. I'm mad for you.
I mean, it's fine. I get it. It's confusing. A lot of other shows don't even specify production versus broadcast order. Like King of the Hill, the first two seasons, there's real production orders for because of the DVDs. But after that, they stopped doing it. It's just like all broadcast order. Futurama, though, the writers and producers were very adamant about releasing the show in its production seasons, which is interesting because like Fox could have made more money if they released the original four production seasons and the five broadcast seasons that
right,
they put
quite literally, yeah, quite literally,
yeah. And then they did like for the later seasons of Futurama, split them. Each production season was 26 episodes, which is a lot. So they just they did that though with the intention of splitting them in half. So those were always released 13 at a time. So like volume 5, 6, 7, and 8 in DVD land is in the correct order, but it's also technically 5 and 6 is production season 6, and 7 and 8 is production season 7. And then the movies are production season 5. It's all so confusing.
It's a mess.
It's truly a mess, but that's a lot of Futurama for you to watch, Nick. You burned through the original show in a week, which is like 72 episodes.
Yeah, I think it was. I think I saw it might have been just seasons 2, 3, and 4. But it was definitely. I think I got it on Christmas, and by New Year's, I was like knee deep into season 4.
Jeez, man.
I can relate though. When I was like. I think I've told this on the pod before, but I was a Futurama fan. I watched it. I remember watching it when it aired because I'm old, and I like literally the premiere series premiere. And I remember watching it and being like, this is good, but it's no Simpsons. And then slowly I started to like watch it. I was watching on Adult Swim and I was like, oh, this is actually like the show's got a lot going for it. And then I still remember the day that I like realized I love Futurama, and it was because I got some of the DVD sets and I cruised through, I think, volume 3, which I think is the longest one, in just one day. I watched the whole volume in one day, and afterwards I was like, oh, I'm obsessed with this show. and that was basically the beginning of my massive obsession with Futurama, which is still one of my favorite shows ever. I love it a lot.
Yeah, good. I think doing the podcast is just taught me how much I love Futurama, because I always knew that I really liked it and I appreciated it, but like the more we watch and the more we talk about, like I keep getting these really big emotional reactions and I'm like, wow, I think I really 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 love Futurama. And this was no different.
Oops, sorry, I'm in a new space and I'm like trying to work out my lighting and I just made it way worse. One sec. I know for everyone listening at home, that doesn't matter, but
it matters to Johnny.
So Into the Wild Green Yonder, I was just waiting with bated breath for every one of these movies, especially the first one, obviously, which Bender's Big Score I still love. And I like Bender and I like Beast of the Billion Back. The only one I really don't love is Bender's Game. But back when this came out, this was the one where I was like, this is like on par with Bender's Big Score to me. Like when it came out, that's how I felt about it. It felt bigger. it tied in a lot of the little details from the show that I liked. So that was something that I really enjoyed watching the show back then. And and it had like the really good Fry and Leela ending, which is nice and heartwarming and lovely. And I think over time it's slightly moved down in my head, but I still think this movie is very good and has a lot going for it. How do you guys feel about Into the Wild Green Yonder? Tariq, why don't you go first? You watched it today.
I watched it today, and I love it, son. I didn't realize because I was excited to watch it, and just like hearing you talk about it, and just like what I remember. Like, I remember all of the Fry stuff. I remember all of the, like, the secret society and the mind stuff. Like, that's all stuff that, like, I remember vividly, and I remember it being this one. So I was excited to see it. Even though I didn't enjoy Bender's Game, like, I still knew that this one was something different. And yeah, man, like, it feels bigger. It feels like a movie again. It feels not just as a movie is Bender's Big Score, but it's not too far off. I can't tell where they cut the episodes. Like, there's only one B story where I'm like, okay, so this clearly stops at this point. Yep, it's the Donbot stuff. It's like, okay, well, yeah, this is clearly like a thing for just an episode. But the rest of it, nah, it's just straight through. It's like a movie, and I enjoyed it thoroughly, man. Like, this, it was really fun. It was funny, and it was gigantic. It felt like a pseudo finale.
Yeah, I feel that. I mean, they definitely were like trying to go all out with a lot of stuff to finish it up in case this was the end. Nick, how do you feel about In the Wild Green Yonder?
Yeah, so I'm pretty positive on it. When you're talking about how you said it was toe-in-toe with Bender's Big Score, at least that was your first impression. I remember feeling kind of the same way. I definitely, this and Bender's Big Score are the ones I've rewatched the most. Right. I think maybe I've seen these three or four times and the others just twice when I'm going in order and rewatching all the movies. But I've gone out of my way to watch just the Ken Keeler ones, which is probably the mark of quality. Which I didn't realize until you guys started talking about the writers. Like, this person wrote this one and this person wrote that one. I guess that's kind of like a critical thing. Like, sometimes I'll look at the writer or the director. There are very, very few times in shows where I'm like, oh, this director made the good ones. right. You know, yeah, I don't like associating that way. But you can kind of see it. Mostly because this, like Tariq said, this one feels the most cohesive, which is really important. But also, even though there is basically a Donbot episode in there, and there's also a segment with Lur during the poker game, which definitely feels like we got to get that character in there because it's the end. Of, might be the last time we ever do Futurama. There's a lot of things that make this one stand out. Like, even that whole first act, it's not in New York. It's on, I guess, New Mars Vegas. Or
yeah, like Mars Vegas. It's all on Mars.
Yeah. It's all there. So that kind of gives it its own vibe. And there's a lot of things that are kind of like superficial, but it gives the movie its own flavor. A lot of it is how all the characters are wearing different outfits. Like, Fry's dressed up as a security guard. He's got the foil hat. And Leela's in the feminista outfit. So I guess, which is weird, they're not on the cover, they're just in the base outfits, but which is a very nice cover, but
it is,
yeah. What else did I have written down about that? So that gives it unique. And I think that having that first act, which is the one segment that you can really tell, oh, that's an episode, take place on News Bars Vegas, is that it doesn't feel like you're just watching a regular episode of Futurama, which was kind of the problem you had with Bender's Game, where it's like, oh, this is just a Leela episode kind of thrown in that doesn't really have it. You could cut a lot of the Demolition Derby stuff from Bender's Game, And you even can cut like the Danba. Yeah, it's fun. I like that too. It's good. You can probably cut the Danba stuff, but it adds to the overall atmosphere. And the intro, that too. We can talk about the intro.
We should.
I love the intro.
Please.
I think we're all on the same page with the intro. The intro, which is like, I think it was written by Ken Keeler, the song, and then performed by Seth MacFarlane, who I think he's just always been really cool about, like, I mean, because Family Guy and Futurama almost had a rivalry, but they both like were both the shows that resurrected from Adult Swim. You know, they both got saved in one way or another.
It's some kind of weird brotherhood thing going on there. It's like a blood pact.
And I think especially for this to potentially be the end for like that guy who created, you know, the other one to come on and sing the whole opening thing for him is really cool. Also, that song gets stuck in my head every
It's in my head
days.
Now.
Yeah, same. Yeah,
it's so good.
It's a really good song.
I listened to it while we were setting up, just staring at Tariq, just all alone on the screen getting set up. Which is pretty funny.
It's super funny.
So you were staring at me listening to it while it was in my head while I was
doing a giant smile over my face, and I'm glad that you didn't look over and like, Nick, what are you laughing? Are you listening to something? I hear you tapping your toes. What's going on there?
I think he's only, I mean, they also had that like little reference to it in Bender's Big Score, which is also kind of a playful dig at Family Guy, but they, when Lars is back in the year 2000 and he's hanging up in his new apartment, the calendar, and it's 12 laughs a year, Family Guy 12 laughs a year, which is really funny. And then like the one other time I really can remember, Seth or Family Guy doing anything Futurama related in Futurama is in the, there's an episode called Game of Tones where it all takes place in Fry's mind. Like basically it's his dreams through his dreams and his like memories. And they kind of change.
Johnny, I think Tariq said he hasn't seen this episode yet. I'm pretty sure we talked about this before. Yeah. Tariq, I think we talked about this in a call.
Tariq, have you never seen Game of Tones? The one with Fry's mom?
He can't remember the Seth MacFarlane cameo, and he said,
"Okay,
that
I'm gonna keep it.
You want to wait until you get to that?
Wait, is he the dog?
Yeah.
Okay, I do know that. All right. Okay, I know. I appreciate that though, Nick, because I definitely forgot. But like, when he started talking, I'm like, I think he's gonna tell me he's the damn dog.
It's such a funny idea though. It's like, it's literally just a moment where they cut over it. Instead of being Seymour is sitting with his legs crossed, holding a martini, and Fry's talking about like how dreams aren't like depictions of real reality. And then Seymour and Seth's voice just goes, "What do you mean, Philip?" So it's just a nice little Brian reference there,
it's
great. Yeah, it's like they've always been friendly, which I really like. And Seth's just got a great voice. I'm so glad he sang this song for this dang movie. Great way to start it. And then, oh, you know what? Let's I can't remember what it was, but the opening, it has an Alienese at the bottom. Let me remember what the opening. What it says. Do you know what it says?
I listened to the commentary, which was also a week ago, because we got this got pushed back, this recording. And it's "The humans will not defeat us." I believe that's what it is. Something along those lines.
They've always done a pretty good job with those for the finales. Like the one for Devil's Hands or Idle Playthings just says, "See you on some other channel," which proved to be true, which is great. And then this one is "The humans will not defeat us." So it's like kind of a marching order, like we'll keep going. And then I can't remember what they did for Overclockwise, but I do know Meanwhile had a really good one. And it was different than normal, because it was all in like bloody red letters. And it just says, "Avenge us."
Avenge us, yeah.
Which is great.
Which what episode has "It Just Won't Stay Dead"?
That's Bender's Big Score.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Because
the first one back. Yeah.
Right. And then like, I was trying to, because I know, because Rebirth, I think just says Rebirth. So
it just says Rebirth, which is rare for it just to say the episode title, but does happen. It has happened a couple times. But actually, I want to talk about Rebirth. We'll talk about it, obviously, in a few months when we get to the revival seasons. But I one thing that was interesting and leads back to what you were saying, Nick, about how everyone's wearing different outfits in this movie. That's one thing that always bothered me about Rebirth, is that they're just wearing their normal outfits again. Like, Leela doesn't have those pants anymore. LaBarbara doesn't have those pants anymore. They're all just back to their normal, normal outfits.
To be fair, in the final shot of Into the Wild Green Yonder, everyone's in their normal outfits when they're in the Planet Express ship.
Are you sure?
I think so. Yes, I think so. Because I remember I jumped right into Rebirth, and I noticed the lighting is different when they kind of redo the scene.
Yes.
But I think everyone's in their normal outfits. Could be wrong. Comments are going to be angry.
I always thought they still had those pants on, those pink camouflage pants. And you know what, Nick? I also noticed that the lighting was different between the two episodes, but I actually finally, this last time watching, and when I was making my last video about the Futurama movies, I figured out why. And it's because the lighting is very blue because they're heading into that blue wormhole. And then when they come out, they're not facing the blue wormhole anymore. So it's normal lighting again. And I always thought it was annoying that the lighting changed. And I finally figured it out. I was like, oh, it actually makes sense.
That makes sense. Yeah.
The tiny things that my brain thinks about when I've watched these movies too many times.
It turns out we were actually wrong about something, and that the movie was and the show was well done, and we're just overthinking it. First time that's ever happened on the internet.
Who would have thunk? I was pretty sure. I mean, according to Twitter, fans understand everything better than the people who make the shows. So, you know,
and you,
I think.
Just you in general.
And me. Yeah, just me.
Right. Well, I'm talking to the viewer. I'm talking about whoever's listening to this right now. Yeah. You're always smarter than you.
You. Everyone else. Right, yeah, everyone else, no. But you.
You guys should be the ones talking about Charlie Brown, man. Not me.
Good grief.
I'm waiting for Flash Beagle. That's the one.
You know what's so funny is that everybody's waiting for Flash Beagle, and it was supposed to be the next video, but I decided to take a break.
Yeah. I'm gonna make a Flash Beagle video before you come back.
Oh my god, please.
I'm gonna put it on.
I would love that.
No, wait a second. I'll do two ring and then Johnny three cellos when Johnny gets a plush.
Yeah.
Oh no. Oh, that's pretty funny. Okay, back to Into the Wild Green Yonder. I agree with both of you that the first episode feels like an episode that's a little disconnected from the rest of it. And then the rest of it feels kind of like where it's cohesive. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is weird to talk about that first episode, which is like, it's Bender having an affair with Adambot's wife and then entering a poker tournament that Fry has also entered because he can read minds. And all of that stuff, other than the mind reading, is irrelevant to the rest of the movie. None of that is even relevant to what happens after it. Although, like, it is a fun thing to do with Fry with his mind reading ability. And then, like, I do like the luck jokes, like the luck humor. Bender just going all in without looking at his cards is pretty funny. And it's also like, it is a funny episode. I like the Don Bot. I think
that's what was cool about it for me was that, like, at least with Bender's game, I just kind of was like, I felt myself trying to figure out where the movie was going because, like, I was kind of bored. But here, I was having such a good time that, like, I didn't care. Like, it didn't dawn on me that the Donbot stuff doesn't really mean anything until literally having this conversation, because it was funny and it, like, he's like so stupid. Like,
yeah, right. Right.
It didn't dawn on you.
the science, baby, the science. I didn't do it. Good stuff. The science.
He's a super funny character, and like the fact that he just, it's like the lengths he goes to not see what's right in front of him is very funny. And then I like, one of my favorite jokes is when he's like, Here, we drive my wife home. It's one of those self-driving cars, so just do whatever you want in the back seat.
Just go in the back and do whatever. What? What the fuck?
Oh, it's so good.
There's a very rare good self-driving car joke. Which, I guess as those have become more real, I feel like the jokes have become more stale.
Right. That is funny how, like, obviously there's something about Futurama being like a retro future, you know, like it's always going to be somewhat related to what we're experiencing now, with a little futury twist to it, but they can't go so full into sci-fi futurism that it's not relatable to us. You know what I mean? And it is funny how, as the years have gone by, now it's been, you know, 8 years since the show ended and like 12 years since this movie came out, and self-driving cars are just like very common now. Like they're right, just, yeah. Right. It's pretty crazy. We've talked about a lot of that stuff before.
They do there's a line in here where after Leela leaves and Bender and Zoidberg both want Leela's iPod. And that's so weird to hear in 2021. Yeah. I haven't seen an iPod in 6 years.
I know. Everyone's all gonna come just back. A phone.
They're going to come back in 1,000 years.
That's what I was thinking. I'm like, they're just going to come back. And that's what's going to happen. Yeah.
The bit that I always think about with this movie is the Zap Brannigan stuff with Sirius XM radio, where he's like, the radio's out, so now we're going to sing songs from the 80s. Which 80s? What is it? There's only one 80s. The 1980s. Yeah. And they sing Hungry Like the Wolf, which is a good bit. One of those things that, it will always be a little dated. I mean, it's a classic song, but it is one of those. I think this kind of continues into the Comedy Central stuff. These more direct references,
right?
The show's always had them. I didn't even think about like the Napster stuff until you guys brought it up in the season 3 video. Not video podcast. It could be a video. You choose to watch it that way.
Yeah. But they do another thing like that in this too, where like, I don't know, it just kind of felt a little out of place. Like it was the secret society stuff with Fry, and they were explaining it to him and how like, I don't know, they were trying to explain the gravity to him and how like a bunch of people are involved, and I think he says even Celine Dion. And it's like, well, why the hell did he say that?
isn't that a runner? There's a runner with one of the people who's playing at the casino. There's like a poster in the back. I'm trying to remember. They talk about it on the commentary. That's why I'm bringing it up, but I can't explain it well.
We'll just play the commentary here.
Please. Yeah. Put it right here.
Mikey, insert the commentary here. Watch that. Watch that before you edit this.
Yes, find the very vague thing that I'm bringing up.
Yeah, you'll find it. Celine Dion. There are like a lot of references like that. Like I think what that is though, is it's a Vegas joke. Cause that's like, they're in Mars Vegas. And so like, and then Celine Dion has like basically a residency in Vegas where she just does shows every weekend or whatever. I think it is a runner, but it's also a runner because they're in Vegas and that's where Celine Dion plays music a lot. Yeah. I like the setting. You know what? Okay. I loved Mars Vegas in the intro sequence. The intro sequence, it looks so cool. Like, but I feel like we don't get to see it as much in the episode, in the movie.
We don't.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. There's a few bits I like the fountain where the guy mixes, what is it? Pepsi, some soda,
and
Mentos to make the fountain do the water display, which is pretty good.
Yeah. I like that too. I think there's a lot of like, there's definitely good bits about it, but it also feels like that was such a cool new setting. I wish we had gotten to see it a little. I guess we got to see it at least in the intro, but at least maybe seen a little more cinematically in the content of the movie itself, especially because they do such a good job with that in New York in the show. So like, you know, I think about the first episode. Oh, here's my dog. For those listening, my dog's wants to be on the podcast.
I'm the guest on this episode.
Yeah, dog.
Get out of here.
But I think about the pilot and how good of a job they did showing how crazy New York was right when Fry gets there. They do this cool pan down and you see from the tops the buildings down and everything in between, and you see people on jetpacks, and you see weird billboards, and you see people who are like naked but have sensor bars over them, and there's like all this weird future stuff. And I guess you could argue that they did that in the intro sequence, but I think it would have been cool to see it from ground level, like see it from a character's perspective. Mm-hmm. Like, what is Mars Vegas like to the characters?
Yes.
It's a nitpick, but it's also like, I would have liked to see that.
There's also, I think it's Viva Mars Vegas, or there's like a season, a later Comedy Central episode that kind of covers that with Zoidberg, which is very good. That's one of the episodes that I like a lot.
That is a good one, actually. Yeah. I forget about that one.
It's a good heist episode.
It's the heist episode. That's right. Yeah. It's like an Oceans. It's like an Oceans episode, basically.
You got to do it.
Yeah.
Everyone got to do it.
Yeah, they did it like 10 years later, but they still, you got to do it.
I think that was the same year as The Simpsons did one. I think it's The Book Job. That's one of my favorite recent episodes.
Was The Book Job that long ago? Jeez.
Well, I say recent episode, but it aired like 10 years ago this November. Right.
Jeez. 10 years ago?
I don't know. Man.
Okay. You just stumbled upon our Simpsons tangent.
Yeah, there it is.
I brought this up the other day because it scares me, is that we're almost as much time away from The Simpsons movie in the first episode of the show. Like, that gap is almost, like, exactly the same.
There's still a few more years.
Yeah, there's still a few more years. It's just scary to know that the show won't stop by the time we reach that gap.
It might not.
That's true.
We would need, what, 4 or 5 more seasons to hit that, and it's probably at, what are they, renewed through 32 right now? Oh, no, they've done 32. They renewed through 34? Right.
Yes.
4? Okay.
Wild.
They need to do at least 35 or 36. I can't remember if the movie's between...
That's crazy.
Is it between 18 or 19?
Ah, fuck. I want to say it's 18.
I think it's after 18.
Yeah, I think it's after 18, because they... 'Cause I feel like they're all 1 year off from the year they air. Like, this is 2021 and we got season 32.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Right? Yeah, yeah. So
that's it. You got it.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
That is weird. That is weird to think about how long it took them to make it and now how long it's been. And also insane to think that they realistically could reach 40 seasons. They might. We'll see.
It's so crazy because started like watching the show in like, I want to say like regularly in 21. I'm a new Simpsons. There's no like Gen Z Simpsons viewer. Because no Gen Z viewers watch The Simpsons.
You.
Just me. Yeah. Only me. Yeah. But I fear it's 10 more years until that's halfway through the show. And I'm like, I don't want that. I don't want to have been around for at least half the run. It feels like it's always been going on way longer than I've ever known.
Even me, who's you know, contextually within this podcast is an old man. The show has been on since a few months before I was born. Like, it's been on, like, it started just before I was born. And it's literally just been on my whole life. Like, and it especially feels weird to have been born so close to the like inception of the show, that like I feel so connected to it because it feels like it's grown up with me. You know what I mean? And so it's really, I think it's going to hit me harder than I maybe expect it to. Like, I expect it to hit me hard, but I feel like it's going to hit me real hard when it actually ends. And
when it ends, I'll be like, well, there's all these hundreds of episodes I haven't seen yet.
There are a lot I haven't seen yet. And I'm kind of, part of me is like, wants to keep it that way until, so that when it's done, I'm like, all right, I've got a good chunk of a couple hundred episodes I still need to watch, which is still crazy that I've watched over 400 episodes of The Simpsons, and I still have hundreds more to watch. Yeah. It's crazy.
I think I might actually have less to watch than you,
I believe it.
I've always ballparked and said, when people ask me how much Simpsons I've seen, I always ballpark and say that I've seen 2/3.
Yeah,
that just kind of feels right. Like, I feel like I've seen a good 2/3 of the show.
I know I've seen up through at least through 200, because that's basically the first 10 seasons. Like, and then I've definitely seen most of leading up to 300, because I remember when 300 aired. I remember watching 300 air in person.
Which
it was
one
like
is 300?
Blink 182 and Tony Hawk were in it, I want to say.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Bart, you know Tony Hawk?
And then I've watched like just snippets of everything after that. Like, I kind of fell off for years, but watched random episodes after that. And then probably seasons like 27 through now, I've picked up on Hulu over the last 5 or so years and just like watched as they aired. When I have a spare weekend, I'm like, oh, I'm going to throw on the new season of Simpsons and watch through it, or catch up to wherever they are now. And so I've probably seen, you know, the last 100 episodes or so.
I remember when 400 came out. I remember when 500 came out. Mm-hmm. I remember 600. I remember 666, but I remember that for a very specific reason.
Well, wasn't that, didn't they do the Halloween special for that one too?
Yeah.
Right. But
I watched that one.
What I remember is that like around like 400 or something like that, I was on a forum and like somebody was making fun of the fact that The Simpsons was still going. And it was like, I can't wait for episode 666 when Lisa does this, yada yada. They were making like a stupid joke. And then I remember when like the ads came up for episode 666, and I was like, shit. Like, it's like they were joking, but it's here. Like, it's actually here.
It's already, yeah. It's crazy.
And fuck, man. Which one is 7?
700?
Yeah.
I didn't watch it yet, but it's called Manger something.
Manger Things, like Stranger Things.
Manger Things.
Yeah, it's a flashback where.
Is it the Todd one?
Yes.
Oh,
I've seen that. Okay, so I have seen. Yeah. I've seen 7. Okay, it's okay.
Yeah,
it's
I saw 2. I've been keeping up with this season and the last season, which is 31 and 32. I can't say this season because it's like I gotta give a number.
It's over now. Yeah,
it's over now. Yeah.
I think I think season 32. I have to watch all of. I watched like the first few, so I think that's when I need to finish up. But I'm excited because I honestly like. I have a feeling that pretty much everything at the back end of the Scully era through most of the Al Jean era is going to feel pretty fresh to me. Like, I know I've seen a lot of it in there, but I know a lot of it I've only seen one time, and I know a lot of it I just don't remember. And and so yeah, there's plenty of Simpsons like, for me to watch.
There's some good some good like lists. Like Al Jean just kind of sits on Twitter and retweets lists a bunch of the time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He likes a lot to do of stuff. That. But a lot of stuff is, which is like, I think it's a good thing that he does it though, because like a lot of it is like lists that say stuff like, top 10 Simpsons episodes from the past 10 years. Like stuff that people obviously doesn't know exist. So if they were to see that, they can go, all right, well, I guess I'll check these out if I want to see like what they're doing for real. Which I think that's good shit. I think that that's like good that like people still do that. Jim's
I
did
think especially.
Did you see that thing Jim's did with Matt?
Yeah,
Matt Selman. Yeah, it's pretty.
Yeah, the modern episodes, and he had Selman.
I'm
he had
in that
Selman
video.
Pitch bunch. Are you?
Oh, you
yeah,
are.
I'm in that video.
Oh, you are. Oh, yeah, you are.
I watched it. I guess I just forgot that.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. I can reveal now, since talking about Simpsons, the mythical, the real Jims, who's been brought up on this pod several times, he's doing a little cameo for my next video. It is not Simpsons related, but it ties back to that that video I did with him. So, I was in it for a small
Jims.
Bit.
Oh,
yeah,
that's right.
He's really going to be there.
That's rad. Wow. The real Jims.
The real Jims is really going to be there.
You know what that reminds me of? Okay, this is going to be a real tangent, but it's a funny story that I feel like I should tell on the pod.
Let's do it.
Childhood. Okay, so I was a kid. Like many kids, I was real into Barney the Dinosaur. I was probably 2 or 3 when this happened, and I remember it really vividly. I I remember specifically sitting, I was at my grandparents' house. I was sitting watching Barney, and my mom told me that I was going to a birthday party soon and that Barney was going to be there. Barney the dinosaur was going to be at the birthday party. And I remember looking at her and saying, "The real Barney?" And she said, "The real Barney." And I got to this party and like the fucking most like dime store Barney costume comes waddling out. And even in my young age, I'm just like, that's not Barney. That's not the real Barney. And I refused to go up and say hi to him and like like sit on his lap and do Barney things. And
Barney
I
things.
I remember sitting in the corner. I remember sitting in the corner of the house with one of those. Do you remember those old bubble guns? They were like multicolored like bubble guns that you could shoot bubbles out of. Maybe I'm real old and you guys don't.
Yeah, know. No, I know exactly what you're talking about.
I remember sitting in the corner pretending to bubble gun Barney because I was so mad he was the fake Barney. and that's when I learned everything was a lie.
Can't believe we tried to assassinate Barney with a bubble gun.
Fake Barney. Yeah, right. He wasn't Barney. Real. Yeah. He was an imposter. He might have killed the real one. anyways, our Simpsons tangent turned into a childhood Barney tangent. And we should probably talk about this movie some more.
Let's talk about it.
All right.
I can bring up something that I thought is interesting. There's a callback to Bender's Game. There's two. There's the whale oil thing. I don't know if you guys brought that up. I think you did.
I brought it up in my video that I did. I don't know if I brought it up on the podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. You can explain that. But the other thing is when they're Bender's making out with Fanny, the Dombot's wife, on the table, and Hermes he calls Bender crazy for dating Fanny, and Bender says, "No, it's Fry who's crazy in this Which is that's like one of the two linking things. These movies, you either got someone goes crazy or someone joins a secret society. Those are the through lines for all of these movies. Including Bender's Game,
Bender's Big Score doesn't really have anyone going crazy or secret.
There's mind control, which kind of counts as going crazy.
Fair enough.
Yeah, no, that's another one because Bender's mind control, Fry's mind control. Bender goes crazy, Fry goes crazy. Bender joins a secret society, Fry joins a secret society. They really had a ton of ideas for all
these. And then Fry also like starts the cult. Like you could call you like the cult of YIVO, you know? So like you can even tie that in with like him joining this other cult. Yeah, that's pretty funny. The other thing that was like weirdly not really even a character I thought about who was in the background was the guy, the number nine guy who's in the Legion of Mad Fellows. And he'd been in the background of the show for years. And, you know, I just didn't think of anything other than, oh, he's just a background character that they use over and over again. But I specifically remember watching the commentary for Bender's Big Score and then pointing him out in a scene and being like, we're finally going to learn what that guy's deal is in a couple movies. And I was like, whoa, that guy's got a thing. And I was excited. And even though I think the Legion of Mad Fellows is cool, I don't know if it wasn't like any kind of mind blowing like reveal or anything. He's just a crazy person. Cool. He can read minds. Neat.
Yeah. I like, they kind of go for an idea, in the commentary, which was like a rough idea for commentary for this movie about him being, the nine was going to be like a level nine. And there's going to be a secret society of a bunch of people with different levels designating their status. I think that's what the idea was. But yeah, it is kind of interesting that there's no other people with the number on their shirt. He's the only person, which is a little disappointing. You would think, well, why does this person have such an iconic, distinct outfit? But no one else does, but I'm glad they used him. He's just a funny Dave Herman character, which I'm fine with. They get him to say a lot of funny things. I think his title is the Grand Curator. I believe that's right. Maybe I'm thinking of someone else. Yeah.
Wait, there's definitely a grand person in Beast with a Billion Backs. The grand, the grand midwife, the grand
that's priestess, the grand midwife, the grand, yeah, that's the
and the grand lunch lady,
the grand lunch lady.
yeah, that sounds right though. He and I do like the I do like this movie overall, but I do feel like the feminista plot and the mind reading plot feel pretty separated the whole time, even though they do kind of ultimately have the same goal, which is to like save the Violet Dwarf star, which is why it's connected. And I do think they do a pretty good job making Fry and Leela's stories feel connected, even though they're separated the whole movie. But I did always feel like this movie feels like it jumps around a little bit, because it's like, oh, we're going to the Leela and the feministas on the run. Oh, now Fry's going on another adventure with the mad fellows. They keep knocking them out, which is a funny running gag. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I think it all came together and they just wanted to like, there was so much they wanted to do with this last one that it kind of like, is like, you know what I mean? There's like, oh, we got to tie in the waterfall family. We got to figure out the number nine man and do Fry's Delta brainwave and have Fry and Leela have something going on. And so like it does, this movie has always felt a little overstuffed to me, but not in a way that makes me dislike it. It's like a more a way that I'm just like, oh, this is a lot, but I still enjoy this, you know?
Yeah, no, I feel similarly, because every time Fry goes to the secret society, it's just exposition. A lot of the dialogue is about exposition. They do a play on it with Fry. I'm trying to remember what the line is. Oh yeah, now that's the sort of hook that grabs the attention of me, the viewer. Audience. Yeah, I think that bit about him being a stand-in, about him trying to puff up the exposition, is funny. But yeah, there's so much going on, and I kind of agree with Johnny's stance that there is a disconnect between the feministas and Fry stuff, because Fry and Leela's scenes all play out basically the same way whenever they interact. Absolutely. Leela's like, tell Fry what's wrong. And Fry's like, I can't tell you. And that's it. Right. Which the payoff is great. But, you know, that does feel a little tacked on, even though it is kind of the core of the movie. You can tell that's what the movie wants to focus on, which is good. Right. Unlike Bender's Game, it's like, that's it. That's what they're... that's what it all revolves around. But yeah, I know that we spent maybe like 10-ish minutes just talking about The Simpsons, but there is a lot to go over with this movie. We didn't even talk about Leo Wong, who they make turn into the big evil villain in this one. I like how Amy gets a few moments to, she like guides the ship. She takes down her dad at the end. I really like the reveal of, her with Leela on the ship, and she holds up the golf magazine to prove to Leela that she can guide her through the course, and redoes the pose. That's a good like character moment, even if it doesn't really come up again, but it works for the movie.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I do think they did a good job giving most characters something in this like finale. Like Amy got some good moments. Bender, like, they have Bender do a lot of debauchery and crimes, you know? So they're like, oh, we've got to get Bender some stuff in here. And then I guess really, like, there's not a whole lot for the Professor and Hermes in this one. Or Zoidberg. But they do, like, overall, it's, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot to do for one movie, and I think they did a pretty good job with all of that stuff. And yeah, it is interesting that Leo Wong was kind of the big bad. Like he's never really been that before. He's always kind of been a rich asshole, but he's never been like the bad guy. But I guess they do the twist is that like the Dark One's kind of telling him what to do, right? They kind of hint at that at the end.
Yeah, he's being swayed by the dark side, which totally fits his character. It's not like all of a sudden he is this evil, big, maniacal villain. They ease into it, and the idea of him turning the galaxy or whatever into a golf course is really funny. It's a very very great, it's excellent set piece, especially all the pipes fly through it.
I love all of that stuff.
It's a great action scene too. I always forget about that.
when they're with the chase scene through the mini golf course, yeah. Mini golf course. Yeah. I love the concept of giant mini golf. That's so funny to me. I really love that chase scene. I think I've talked about this on episodes before, but one of my favorite lines in the whole show is after Kif tells Zap that like they're going to get cut in half by the windmill if they keep going, he just goes, same speed ahead, just completely defiant. And then of course they get chopped in half, which is one of the worst things Zap's ever done, because like thousands of people die in that moment. Like, you just see so many corpses floating in space after that. It's so messed up.
Right.
Yeah, there is a lot of fun stuff like that. Like the Zap Brannigan's got a big role in this movie. I like that they tie Fry's lack of a Delta brainwave into the story. I like that they tie the stuff with Fry and Leela together. But to Nick's point, I agree. Like, the Fry and Leela scenes all felt like they were written later, almost like it feels like they had the whole bulk of the movie and they're like, Fry and Leela don't interact enough in this, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then they're like, yeah. When she goes back to get like the leech, they can have a little conversation. And then then Fry's got a cell phone telephone in this movie, so he can call Leela, you know? And, and
it's my favorite
I also
joke in
like
the movie, cell phone telephone.
Yes. I actually often call my phone a cell phone telephone because of this movie, which is just redundant, but that's why it's funny, I guess. it's good. Do you guys have any other like aspects of this movie that you didn't think worked, or any aspects of this movie that you like really, really like that we haven't talked about yet?
I have a minor one off the top of my head, which is I think Johnny might have talked about this before. I keep saying you guys might have covered this before. you might have already reviewed this movie before.
We talk about the same shit all the time, so
yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, yeah. Do you guys remember the book job? It's a good, great Simpsons episode. But anyway. So I have a little problem, which kind of a nitpick. They bring up Fry's Delta brainwave. But Nibbler isn't, I don't think Nibbler's in this movie. Weird choice not to have the Niblonians in this thing that clearly connects to Fry's history and his importance as kind of a chosen one, even though they're in Bender's Big Score and they don't really do anything, but they're there just to have the importance and remind the viewer. And also that's a whole huge part of that movie, doing all the callbacks. But not having Nibbler here, kind of a missed opportunity, and maybe a better way to tie back to the whole thing that you guys complained about with Bender's Game, about how the stupid line about, but you already wiped our brains.
Blanked our memories.
You forgot to wipe our memories. Yeah.
Which is so dumb.
Yeah. No, that kind of feels like a Simpsons line, kind of calling out what the writing problem is.
Right.
But yeah, it feels like they didn't really clarify. Oh, I guess he just doesn't wipe their minds anymore. Because I think in the Comedy Central stuff, Nibbler just talks to all the other characters. There's a good Nibbler Amy episode.
Yes.
Right when they get back, that I like a lot.
Yeah, I really like. Is that Darn Cats? Is that the cat?
Yeah, That Darn Cats.
That is one that we'll talk about it obviously when we get there. But like, that is one that when it came out, the Futurama fan base was like up in arms about it, because they thought it was just a meme episode. They were like, they're just capitalizing on cat memes, because it was kind of around the time cat memes were popular.
Yeah.
But like, it's a good episode. It's a really funny episode. It's actually one of my favorites of that season.
Cat memes, they're still around.
Yeah, I really like that one. It is weird though how they treat him afterwards, because sometimes he just acts like a pet, and then other times when he needs to, he just talks. So they just kind of just let him do whatever he wants. But I agree. Like, I think he is in this movie, but only for the final big shot of every character. I think the Niblonians are in that, but he's not a part of the story, obviously. And I got a really annoying comment when I made this Futurama movie retrospective video, and I got a comment that was, if they're listening to this, they're going to hear me call them annoying. But they told me that the mind wiping line is like, it's a fourth wall break. It's not a mistake. It's just a fourth wall break. I'm like, well, it's not a very good fourth wall break. It's like, there's nothing about breaking the fourth wall and just staying.
I think that's the problem.
Like, okay, maybe it's a fourth wall break. I wish it was more, I wish it was funnier or made more sense or like was, you know, at least entertaining. But yeah, I agree. Like, I'm glad they tied in his Delta brainwave. And I don't think everything with his Delta brainwave needs to tie that into Blonians. But based on the fact that the last time we dealt with it was when Nibbler was just like, told him, we will ask for your help again. You know what I mean? Like, and so the fact that they did that and then never, and then he never really helped the Niblonians ever again with his Delta brainwave.
Here goes Johnny talking about the other again.
I've already made a whole video about it. I'm not going to do it. I've talked about it too much. Okay, so here's the thing about the other. No, I'm just kidding.
It's just a Star Wars reference.
It's just a Star Wars reference. Nibbler is Yoda. We get it. He's 900 years old and he's Yoda. Let's see. You know what? There was also a funny thing that I forget about is that they refer back to the career chips finally in this one. Like, they didn't do that for years. And then they when Planet Express is going out of business, they remove the career chips from Zoidberg and Hermes, which is like, oh, yeah, I guess that was a thing that you've referenced three times since the pilot where you established
right,
it.
Yeah.
And then they do a funny, they do kind of a funny gag because Planet Express is going out of business. And so that's kind of the, that's kind of the in reference to this is the last episode. Like Planet Express is going out of business. We're going to be done after this, you know? And then they use, I think they use the same banner. I think the banner that is up on the Planet Express ship that says going out of business again. And then I think they use it again in Overclockwise. They do the same thing. Which you know, it's funny. Small sight gags, I guess. So let me, here's one other thing. There's one act of this movie that bothers me. One act. And it's the act. No, I guess it's really two acts. But it's mostly one act. And it's in, like, the last episode.
Okay.
The last episode of this movie.
Part four.
The feministas, they get caught, they get arrested, they get tried, they get sent to prison.
Oh, yeah, you did talk about this.
And then they break out, and it all happens, like, in genuinely 10 minutes of runtime of the movie.
Right, yeah.
So much, so fast, and I guess I am curious why... what that served the story if they just they went through all of that only to be back on the run again to go to the big climax of the movie. You know what I mean? Like, what, why? Mm-hmm. I guess there's the whole Bender thing. Bender gets his, like, oh, he gets his big, he breaks everyone out, and that was his plan all along, to commit the most crimes. But it does just kind of feel like it goes into this act and it's just like, and loop, and back to where we were, and let's continue the story. You know, it's kind of funny.
Yeah, I will. I'll give it credit. Lewis stuff does meet back up with Fry stuff. I do think that parts the second half, or maybe like, I don't know, part two and part three are kind of cohesive. Where with some of the other movies, there's a lot of jumping around between subplots A, B, C, then maybe sometimes D3. But in this case, it's the Fry stuff, the Leela stuff, Bender stuff, and that all comes together in the chase. Then they reconvene at the end. And there's the Planet Express scenes, which are short. There's like two of them. Two or three.
I love Tickle Me Bender. That was a good one.
Tickle
little,
Me
Bender is
a great bit.
Yeah,
that's a good
speaking of the professor. There's one thing in the professor, I guess I'm nitpicking a lot, but that's what I do. Nick sounds like Nick. Gotta do it.
Nick pick. Yes, it's a Nick pick.
Nick, it's a Nick pick.
Oh, remember they used to sell the Nick pick DVDs with all of the cart, the random Nickelodeon cartoons?
Yeah, that's right. But anyway, the professor has a character turn at the end of the movie where I think he's talking to Leela, where he comes to rescue them at the end with on the ship. And he's like, well, I'm a man of science. I shouldn't have been doing all this stuff for money. And I'm like, I don't completely buy that, especially because it's not really motivated by anything. He just kind of comes to that conclusion on his own terms, which is not strong character writing.
Right.
But I don't know. I always think about the money shower. That's like the signature joke from this movie.
Right.
So to kind of go from that to like, I'm going to rescue you. I don't care about the money anymore. I don't really see how you go from A to B there.
Yeah, it's just because like, oh, we're going out of business now. So like, what did it matter, I guess? But I don't know. It's like, I struggle to see it as well. And it is funny though, because like, I also find it funny how like, I find it funny when the professor is motivated by money. Like even in, well, actually, I don't even know if I like, I think I like this joke conceptually more than I like the execution, but in Bender's Game, there was the runner about how he was making like makeup for dogs.
Yeah.
And he's like, just for the money, which like, I don't think I liked in the context of the movie, but when I think back on it, I'm like, it's funny that the professor wanted to make money by making makeup for dogs. It's interesting. That's an interesting thing about that. I haven't done a Professor Farnsworth video yet. Maybe I should look into his whole motivation.
Yeah, well, it makes him tick, man.
The weird thing, though, also, though, now that I'm thinking about it more, is like there was definitely in the Mother's Day episode, like the whole thing is that he quit because I'm pretty sure in the Mother's Day episode, or maybe it was a different episode. In one episode, they talk about how he quit working for mom because she wanted to turn something that he invented into a weapon to make money.
Yeah, I think that might actually be Mother's Day.
It's either Mother's Day or it might actually be the Valentine's Day episode. It might be Love and Rocket. I can't remember which one.
Okay.
But they definitely establish that he's like, I have the moral superiority here, and I'm not going to do this for money only. I want to make a cute toy, and she wants to turn it into a monster. So you know, maybe, I mean, also that was like years and years ago, so maybe he's changed. He's changed. Time has changed him over the years. Well, should we talk about like the big finale of this, the big ending point?
Sure.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, there's kind of two finales. There's the end of the movie, and then there's the end of the show. Like, it's kind of two separate things. Like, there's the climax of the story in the movie, and then there's kind of the epilogue, which is them wrapping out the show and going into the wormhole. But I think it all comes to that. I think this is where like the movie works and it really comes together. Like it all really comes together and is in the like Violet Dwarf star demolition sequence where everyone's there to watch it. And you've got this stuff between Fry and Leela. And what works about that is like, is that the reason that they're able to save the day, quote unquote, is because Leela is willing to believe in Fry. You know, she finally is like, I know you well enough to trust that you're doing the right thing. Which is a great I think that's a really great moment between the two of them. It's like a top moment, Fry and Leela moment to me in the whole show. And then also he's kind of willing to sacrifice himself. He thinks he's the Dark One, and so he basically tries to kill himself so that he can save the day and save the universe, which is pretty selfless. One of the most selfless things Fry's done, which is cool.
Right. Yeah.
He's done a few selfless things. He jumped in front of Leela when the bee came after him. Yeah. Sting. But what do you guys think about this ending? Do you think this all worked? Do you think they did a good job tying it all in?
Yeah, I think so. I was, satisfied the entire way. I don't know. I think maybe even looking at it through the context of like this could possibly be the last thing that they did, even kind of helped a little bit too. It all felt really like bittersweet and everything like that.
Right.
And they do that. They do that thing that we talked about in the Simpsons movie with how every character in the crowd is like someone you'll recognize. Which I thought was a really, really nice touch. It's everybody that you'll recognize, and it's Snoop Dogg, who does a really great job here too. Snoop Dogg's pretty rad here. I don't like that. I don't like that when they go to his brain, he's thinking about naked women. But
right.
Everything else is rad.
Yeah. That's an insane shot of all the characters. All the characters animated and counting down.
Yep. Which every one of them.
Yeah. It's funny because you see they hand out like posters and stuff. It's like all the characters in the show for like the Simpsons. I have a Simpsons one on my wall, but hardly do you ever see like huge ginormous crowd shot with hundreds of characters. They actually animate that. So apparently, according to the commentary, they got fined by Rough Draft Studios by having so many characters in one shot. Yeah. Nice.
And they were just like, we'll take it. Yeah,
they did it. Yeah, they must have had room in the budget. Or however that works.
Right. I love that shot. It's so cool. And I do want to pour over it and like really nitpick and like look at every single character and see what they're doing. There was one thing I noticed about it that bothered me a tiny bit. And it's that you see Gunther, the monkey from season 1 from Mars University. And he is too big.
he is
a big monkey. but other than that, it's a really awesome shot. It's really cool. And it's cool to just see, like, it is a cool, fun way to celebrate the end of the show, to have every character they've ever had in the show in one shot counting down to the end of Futurama. You know, that's a really cool thing.
Yeah. And they also point out, I love to say I made this comparison myself, but I didn't. I stole it. It also ties back to the beginning of the show with the countdown to the year 3000.
If you didn't say that, I was going to say it because I was just thinking that.
And the beginning of the movie starts similarly too, where they're all waiting to explode old Mars Vegas.
That's right.
With a very similar booth design for the bleachers.
That's right. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That is a way that it tied back around. Cool. Those writers, they know what they're doing sometimes, don't they?
Allegedly. Yeah.
Every once in a while, they do something smart.
It's funny, though. I don't know if we've talked about this, but Ken Keeler is obviously like a beloved Futurama writer. I don't love all of his episodes. We actually talked about some that we didn't like over the course of the first few podcasts we did, but he's written so many good ones. He also, though, wrote The Principal and the Pauper.
Oh, okay. I was going to bring that up because I was like, am I right?
Yeah. And which I actually don't have a real problem with, other than like I get the people who are like lore focused, but I think it's a good episode.
It's not a bad episode. Like, it's funny. Funny.
Yeah, it's still, funny episode.
It's funny. It's just they just do something really dumb, and that's all. But other than
and you know what? I also think that at that point, when they were only 9 seasons deep, there was less of a tolerance for the show trying weird stuff because the show had just been so good for so long, and people were like, "This show is great." And now that we're 32 seasons in, it's like, that's not even close to the weirdest thing they've done.
Man. Homer dies. He dies. Homer actually dies once. Like, it's way worse now.
Exactly.
I think, it's just weird just like listening to just like the history of that kind of stuff. Cause like, I was reading about people that hated the monorail one, like when it happened, because it was like,
insane.
What are they doing? This is like a cartoon. Like, it was like, well, it's kind of what it is. But
if you can track it down, I highly recommend listening to the audio commentary for Prince and the Pauper, which has the showrunners and Ken Keeler on, which is a very sometimes very heated defense and just kind of general discussion of the episode. The only thing I take issue with is I think Ken Keeler says, this is the episode I'm the most proud of writing.
He does say that.
There are not way better him, Futurama episodes.
But good for him, honestly. I think I can definitely like relate to feeling the need to really defend it in that like that fervently. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, he's the
really
hate proud only of the makes your like of it stronger.
Right, exactly. And then I guess that commentary would be because they must have, you know, those commentaries they must have recorded years later, because it was because that came out in like what 98, and so they didn't start doing the DVDs until like the early 2000s, so they probably recorded this in like 03 or something like that.
I think it's 2006, 2007. I think that's around. I think that is a Simpsons movie sneak peek on it. So that's how I know.
And then that was a holdover. So that was Weinstein and Oakley on the commentary. Yes. Yeah,
they're on that. Which is the end of another Simpsons tangent.
It's okay. We do them all the time.
I always forget that some season 9 episodes, which are like not my super faves. Like I'm mad on Lisa the Simpson, which you guys have talked about that. I always forget that's an Oakley and Weinstein episode.
It's an Oakley Weinstein holdover.
Season 9. Yeah.
Yes. We got a comment about that actually. We were talking about it last week, and we got a comment, or maybe another week. We were talking about it at some point. We got a comment recently, pointing out that is a Weinstein Oakley holdover.
That's another one where I'm not in love with the story, but really funny episode. Really, really. Right. At least it tries. Mm-hmm. I see what they were going for, and it's very. They try to do a really nice Lisa episode. Like I get what they're going for, and so there's some really good Lisa scenes in there.
Yeah, they and then they also do. Wait, is Lisa the Simpson in season 9?
Yeah, that's the Simpson Gene one. Maybe I got the name wrong.
Is it? I don't remember. The one I really like. There's a lot of good Lisa. Man, there's a lot of good Lisa ones. That name sounds right though. Lisa the Simpson.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
It is season nine.
Do the DVDs still start with like a thing with Matt Groening like talking about the season? Okay, because I remember the season 9 one. He just says something super fucked up. He's like, "We find out that Principal Skinner is Armin Tanzarian in one of my least favorite episodes." Like, come on, son. Yeah. Why would you say that?
That's fucking rude as hell, bro. Yeah. I don't like that at all.
Tariq and I were talking about this last week. Matt Groening, if you listen to some of the commentaries, Matt Groening's like, I've never seen this one.
Yes! What kind of, like, I don't know. I told you guys something the other... Oh! I found out that Matt Groening wrote Colonel Homer, and I didn't know.
Yes, I actually weirdly, right before you had said that, I had noticed that because I'm constantly just surfing through the list of the Simpsons Wikipedia and just like looking at the Simpsons seasons, and I realized that literally within the week that you mentioned that on Discord, I was like, oh yeah, I know, I just noticed that too, which is really funny. Yeah. But yeah, season 3, which is weird because that's also the first season where he wasn't one of the showrunners. And I think it's the only script in the history of the show that he is a sole writing credit on.
Absolutely. Yep. And that was just weird.
That's wild. Very, very crazy. To bring it back to Into the Wild Green Yonder through the Matt Groening talking about things on commentary tangents, I learned through this commentary, which I'm sure you learned as well, Nick, that he's the one who really pushed for them to end this one with the Fry and Leela kiss.
Yeah,
he's like, this
so
might be
happy
the end.
About that.
Yeah, and so like they were gonna originally just do the ending, they were kind of debating whether or not they should actually like seal it with a kiss, or should they just have like they say they love each other and then they fly into the wormhole. And Matt was basically like, this might be the end. Like, we might not ever do another one. Just go all in, have them kiss, and then fly into the wormhole. Yeah,
that reminds me a lot of how they got that kiss into the Adventure Time finale, which is whole different show, but whole different situation too. But that was also a case of one of the storyboard artists being like, "Come on, you got to do it. You got to do it. It's the last moment for these characters." And it was until they brought it back, but you know,
until they brought it back again,
until they
and
brought
then
it
do
back
it again.
So both times they brought it back both times.
They're very similar. Yes.
So let's talk about this ending part though. How do you feel about like the final bit? They're running from Zap, going to the wormhole. Do you think that, how do you feel about that as a way to cap off potentially the series at the time?
I love it, man. I really it's love good. It. Yeah.
It's crazy how good of a job they did with final finale moments four different
man,
times.
The fact that it like turns into the start of the intro and then it starts to play. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh man, this is rad.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I didn't even think about this until you just pointed it out, but that could also be kind of the loop thing that a Meanwhile does, where it's like they're going back again. That could also imply where they're going back to the beginning of the show.
Yeah, it's a wormhole. They don't know when or where they'll pop out.
They don't know when or where. I've kind of warmed up to the ending as a finale because, like I said, maybe like an hour ago, I never really saw this as a finale, as the end of Futurama. It was, this is the end of the TV movies. I will start watching volume 5 of the DVD sets tomorrow.
Totally.
Yeah. I was so lucky. Or alternatively, we can talk about this, about how some people who probably only seen this on streaming, it's like, they aren't even movies. They're like arcs. And there's bits that people haven't even seen. And some extra bits too that aren't even in the DVDs. It's very weird, but I'll finish my thought here. I think it's a very interesting final moment, but it does have the kiss gives it a moment of finality, and it sticks with you. And all the characters are together. I think the weird thing is Kif and Amy are back together after the end of Beast of the Billion Backs, and I don't know if they ever.
Okay, thank you.
Where else in the
they
movie?
They don't.
The only other thing is Kif, when Fry reads his mind, he's like, oh, I miss Amy.
Do they never. I thought the end of Beast with a Billion Backs, it all. I thought that them all dating Yivo together. I thought we see Kif and Amy like together on Yivo at the end of Beast with a Billion Backs.
We do, but I think the thing, at least I remember talking about, was like, it bothered me because, like, it's, like, so matter-of-fact. Like, there's so much stuff happens to, like, Amy and Kif that, like, I feel would be a much bigger deal that, like, just doesn't... They just kind of matter-of-fact that Kif does this, like, roll-his-eyes thing, exact, and then they just forget about it.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't like that. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't like that.
I don't know. I think that was what the point of that movie was like the jealousy aspect, right? And so like it feels like the characters get
but she slept with Zap. Like so I don't know if that's
so
jealousy
almost
at that point.
Every character in the show.
Is that jealousy though? If you get cheated on, are you jealous?
He didn't get cheated on. He was dead. He was literally dead. He was a dead person.
Okay. All right. This is a little rough. All right.
I look.
All right. I forgot he died. That kind of changes things. I'm sorry, Amy. I'm sorry, Zap. I forgot Kim died.
I understand. Like, I definitely think it would have been a bigger thing if she had straight up cheated on him, but she thought he was dead. Like, they had a funeral for him. Like, he was gone. No, I hear what you're saying, though. If that were the case, I would have had a problem with it. But I think through the Yivo relationship is, like, so many people, like, it's Fry getting over his jealousy of Colleen's, like, other lovers. It's like, you know, it's like, it's them realizing, oh, if like the most important thing just is that we're together. You know what I mean? Like, let's us being together, like other stuff doesn't matter. It's like our love for each other is what's important. Right. So I don't know. I always just read that situation with Yivo kind of fixed all of those jealousy issues that they were going through. Yeah. Anyways, let's, the other thing I like about this ending is, I just like Bender's into the breach meat bags. That's a good final Bender line as they go off into the unknown. I really like this ending. I think it's a good finale ending. I do still think it feels like it doesn't feel super connected to the overall story of the movie, but I don't know if that matters. You know, I actually kind of also feel that way about the episode Over Clockwise, which is a good episode. But that episode has an ending that is great, but also not particularly connected. It's like the resolution to the B and or C plot of that episode is Fry and Leela related, and it's great moment, one of the best Fry and Leela moments in the show, but it doesn't feel super connected to the plot of Over Clockwise, which is why I think Devil's Hands and Meanwhile are the two best series finales they did.
Yeah, no, I agree all with about you. Them I don't want to go too much into Over Clockwise, but tonally that moment feels a little separated from the rest of the episode, and you can kind of say something similarly about Into the Wild Green Yonder, which I want to just point this out. I think Into the Wild Green Yonder is the best title for any of these movies. Like,
I agree.
Which is funny because Bender's Big Score is kind of the worst. Like, that title has very little to do with the actual plot of the movie. Yeah.
I like The Beast with a Billion Backs and Into the Wild Green Yonder as titles the best for sure.
And Bender's Game, it's not a parody of Ender's Game.
Yeah, it's a parody of the title of Ender's Game.
Yeah.
As a literal reading, it is Bender's Game of Dungeons and Dragons.
It works. But it's funny because Ender's Game is a sci-fi thing, and it's all about Futurama but fantasy. If it was like just a regular episode of Futurama, that title might work better, and it wasn't focused on the fantasy stuff, but that's another nitpick.
I agree. I also, Tariq and I were talking about the DVD covers and how even though Bender's Big Score is such a good movie, it's the least exciting cover.
It does have the worst cover,
It's the worst cover, and honestly, all three of the other ones are great covers. The Beast with a Billion Backs is awesome. Bender's Game is awesome, and Into the Wild Green Yonder is especially awesome. Great. Whoever they had designed those things, so cool. And if you guys have those, I don't know if you guys have those DVDs. I know you said you. I don't know if they came in the same packaging, Nick, in your complete set.
Yes, they have the. It's all the cardboard packaging. It's all the 2011, 2012 reissues with the all cardboard packaging, not the individual plastic cases.
That's what I had, is the cardboard packaging, the carbon neutral packaging, as they were as they were plugging them as. But the insides of them are incredible too. There's just really cool artwork, and they're beautiful. It's a beautiful artwork for the casing for all four of these, or three of the four of these DVDs. So if you haven't seen those, look up some photos online. They're very cool. I don't know what else you guys want to talk about. Anything else you want to talk about before we wrap up our Into the Wild Green Yonder episode?
I have two things. What this movie appealed to me as a person. The first thing being when they go to play poker and the announcer says, welcome viewers who fell asleep with the TV on, because that is 1,000,000% how I would watch poker on Comedy Central.
Very relatable.
So I thought I laughed really loud at that. And the other thing is, like, when they're talking about how professor's talking about how men just like want things bigger. And he's talking about, and he has like a 301-inch television. And I just kind of, I looked at that and I was like, I would buy a 301-inch television. Like, I really would.
and then he throws his Slurpee at it and breaks it because they advertise the 302-inch.
Yeah, it's so funny. And then,
love the timing on that.
Yeah.
And then I later in the so movie, and then later in the movie, they're at the Planet Express building and they're watching on a 304-inch version.
Oh my god.
It's so funny. Oh, that's good stuff. I'm trying to think if there's any other things about
I had a weird thought while watching the movie, which is when they're in the prison, the feministas are in the prison, there's this female Warren character who is in the movie for like 2 minutes. She doesn't even get like a resolution. And I had a thought.
She's in that 10 minutes of all of the feminista arrest things. Yeah.
And I had this thought, which is, I remember in Beast with a Billion Backs, Colleen, Fry's girlfriend, talks about how she got promoted to chief of police. And like, well, if she didn't go with Yivo, they could have brought her back and she could have been in that role, and it would have been a character you recognize. But also, and it would have also been connected tissue between some of these movies, which you guys have talked about after Bender's big score. And I almost said Bender's Beast Big Game, which I made that mistake before in front of you guys. Yeah. After Bender's Big Score, Beast with Boom Backs, those are the only two connected. They should have connected the others in some other way. That would have been neat.
Yeah, just have some of those characters return. Also, I like Colleen. I think she's a good, funny character.
I agree.
Although I don't know what the timeline was with Brittany Murphy's untimely death, or whether or not not possible. Yeah. But
actually, another thing I learned from the commentary is that they avoided the writer's strike in 2007 with this movie, because they worked around it just right. I think they got the script in before and the animatic in color after. So yeah, which is really, really interesting, because Futurama kind of avoided that by doing these movies and then coming back in 2009 when they started production again.
That is crazy. So they just skipped the writer's strike entirely. Wow.
Yeah, wow.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool, Futurama. yeah. And then should we rank these movies? I guess we should rank the movies, huh?
Oh, let's do it.
The movies. All right. This has changed over the years for me. I feel like people can already guess based on how I've talked about them, and there's only four of them, so you know, it's kind of easy. Yeah. I would say my original ranking would go, I'm going to go 1 to 4 because it's easier for me. My original ranking was Bender's Big Score, Into the Wild, Green Yonder, Beast with a Billion Backs, Bender's Game. But I think in the last few years, I've moved Beast with a Billion Backs up. So I think mine is Bender's Big Score, Beast with a Billion Backs, Into the Wild, Green Yonder, Bender's Game. Bender's Game is always the bottom. Bender's Big Score, always the top. And those two just kind of flip depending on my mood.
that's pretty funny, because my ranking is literally your first one.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, I have a feeling. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's Tariq's ranking, everyone.
Yeah, what you got, Nick?
Yeah, Nick, what you all got? All right. So I think originally it was Bender's Big Score, Into the Wild, Green Yonder, Bender's Game, and then Beast with a Billion Backs, because Beast with a Billion Backs, I don't know, that ending kind of burns me a lot, because it's very negative. It's all about jealousy, and it's I don't know, it feels the least connected from some of the show, with some of the relationships they develop there. But now I think it's probably, like you guys have said, or similarly, Bender's Big Score.
Let's hear it.
Into the Wild, Green Yonder. Stupid titles, I hate them, they're so long. Beast with a Billion Backs, Bender's Game. There it is.
All right. So we almost have the same. I have one that my current ranking swapped two of them, but you guys have the same one, and my original one was the same as those. Right. And we're all basically on the same page.
we all agree on what's the best one and what's the worst one.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And
it was this viewing that definitely came around to not being the biggest fan of Bender's Game.
Might have
been influenced by how you guys, both in private and on the podcast, were like, oh, I'm not looking forward to that one. That one's not going to be fun to do.
Definitely our most negative episode of the podcast. We did a good job talking about the things we liked about it too, I think.
Yeah. Yes. And The Simpsons.
And The Simpsons, which is always fun to talk about.
This is a Simpsons pod. I hope people have caught on by now that this whole podcast, this whole show is just a Simpsons show.
I know it's weird because we've only talked about The Simpsons movie, but we've really been talking about The Simpsons the whole time. This is just a secret Simpsons podcast, since all of these shows stemmed from The Simpsons, technically. But we'll also definitely talk about The Simpsons at some point.
When you guys get to The Simpsons, you have to take your avatars and make them yellow.
Oh, we should do that.
Oh, man, would it make sense for mine to be? I'll do it anyway.
Was not thinking about that.
Well, do it anyway. Hey, did you ever hear about how black people were supposed to be purple? I think that's horrible. I think that would have been the worst thing that they could have possibly done.
They're gonna do like, they're gonna make them multicolor like Doug.
Yeah, I think black people were gonna get purple.
I see how they got there because like white people are yellow. So they're like, we got to get another color in there for other, you know, but yeah, it probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. It probably wouldn't have, probably would have not aged well.
No, it's like making Smithers black. Like that was kind of, I'm glad they didn't do that.
Why does he have darker skin in his initial appearance? Was he meant to be black, or was it an animation error?
It was an animation thing.
Okay.
Some kind of miscommunication with Klasky Supo. And like, I don't know, man. Like, there was a lot of stuff like that in the early days of the show. The only reason Apu is the way that he is because somebody didn't listen to the script. I don't know if he was joking or not, but in Mike Reese's book, he says that he wrote, when he wrote the script where Apu first appears, he wrote store clerk, but in parentheses, he wrote, don't make him Indian. And then they did it anyway. And that's where it came from.
Wild.
So, right. So with Smithers, it was kind of a similar thing. And I was listening to, I don't know if you ever see that serious jibber jabber thing that Conan did with all of the Simpsons writers.
Oh, but, I got to watch that. Yeah.
That thing's rad. I watch it like at least once a year. And in it, at a certain point, they talk about, it's kind of briefly brought up, like Smithers, his design being black, and it is kind of weird that like the most I'll use these words, Mr. Burns' servant is like the only character at the time that would have been black. That would have been that. I'm glad they like were like, yeah, this is kind of nuts. Let's not do this.
This is a mistake,
right? Yeah,
That's wild. All right, well. I guess with that, we should wrap this up. Nick, do you want to plug anything? Got anything to plug?
So I have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/c/NintendoReviews. That's a mouthful. It might be in the description. Maybe it won't. Who knows? But
we'll tag you in the description of the
YouTube. Yeah, I do videos on cartoons and cartoon accessories. And in the future, you might actually see Futurama pop up the DVDs as a topic. Which I'm very excited about. The video's been on the back burner for a while. Very happy to be here. Thank you guys for inviting me on. This was a great experience and always down to talk about Futurama.
Great. Thanks for coming, dude. You're a great guest.
Yeah, it was great.
Had a lot of fun.
Yeah,
we'll definitely bring you back either for more Futurama or, you know, we're going to get to the Simpsons at some point. We gotta start to flesh out our guest roster for that stuff.
Yeah. Right, and thank you for not having me on Beast with a Billion Backs.
We were threatening
Nick with what he really didn't want to do Beast with a Billion Backs. And every time he was like, I want to be on the pod. And we're like, okay, but it has to be Beast with a Billion Backs.
did I talk about it in the last one? But
yes.
Like, okay, because every time we bring it up, you would just go, no.
Yeah. I did a really extremely whiny, no.
It would kill me every time.
So good. All right, and with that, that's when I want to say thank you to Michael Yunez for producing and editing our podcast. Thank you to Carrie Feek for amazing artwork. Thank you to Jake Neutron for our incredible theme song. Thank you to Toonrific Tariq for being my co-host. Thank you to Nick Tendo for being our guest today. And thank you to me for also being a co-host.
thank you to the audience.
Johnny. Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you guys. Appreciate it. Bottle plush. Please.
Yeah. Get Tariq's plush. It's Tariq's got his plush on Makeship. Go check it out and buy one. And with that, thank you very much. Thanks for listening and goodbye.